Colin Eastwood is calling for the two governments to implement much of the draft accommodation, as it's been called, between the DUP and Sinn Féin. Mr Eastwood, the leader of the SDLP, is with us this morning. Colin, good morning to you, Colin.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. So set out what you're saying here.
Well, I think, understandably, the last couple of weeks, yourself and others and everybody has been focusing on kind of what went wrong, who sent what email, who signed up to which part of the alleged agreement, accommodation, whatever you want to call it. But I do think now is the time to focus more on what happens next. And, you know, it suits us all politically to blame everybody else for what happened, but what we need to do now is think about how we actually get these institutions back up and running, because my fear is, and my fear has been for the past 13 or 14 months, that it's very easy to pull these institutions down, but it's not that easy to put them back together again. And the longer this goes on, and the more pressure comes on the British government and the DUP and everybody around Brexit and all other issues, it's just going to get very, very difficult to get this back up and running. And I think the history of our process tells us that at times the process fails, and when that happens, the two governments have to step in. So my very strong view is that the British and Irish governments need to get together. They should convene the Intergovernmental Conference. That should be meeting anyway. It's nothing to fear. It's part of the Good Friday Agreement. But its first item of business should be to agree a package of legislation that would allow for an executive to be formed.
And
in other words,
impose that on Northern Ireland above the heads of locally elected politicians.
Well, I think locally elected politicians have failed. We have proven over 13, 14 months that this cannot be done. I just don't believe that, and I've been the first person to call for an independent mediator and all those things, and for the process to be done properly and more people to be included. But we are now at a point where decisions have to be taken. So what we're faced with in the coming fortnight is a direct rule budget from London. My view on that is, you know, a budget is one of the most fundamental things, probably the most fundamental thing that any government can do. It's setting out the budgetary priorities for all of the public sector for the next year. That has to be done. A budget has to be put in place to allow some comfort for a public sector and for those organisations that rely on public money. But it can't be done by the British government alone, particularly when the British government have a coalition type agreement with the DUP. So what we're saying is, this is happening. Things are being done above our heads. We are now moving very swiftly into, you know, quasi direct rule, whatever it's going to look like. It's going to be decisions taken out of our hands. So my view is, if we're going to do that, let's start taking decisions that allow us to form a government. The hard issues are there. We know what they are. We know what we think. We know what the accommodation between the DUP and Sinn Féin was. The British government and the Irish government have responsibility as co-guarantors of this process to represent the community here. And, I think it's unfortunate.
You want to facilitate and encourage, Colm, those two governments to go above the heads of locally elected politicians, including yourselves, and impose legislation on Northern Ireland against the will of the mandate that the political parties have here.
Well, it's not my first choice. My first choice is that we would have had a proper negotiation with everybody involved. And, you know, I've rehearsed this a number of times over the past year. That could have hopefully brought about a resolution. But we're now at a different place. We're at a place where that has the process that was decided upon, the very private process between the DUP and Sinn Féin, failed. So we now need action, and the public cannot wait any longer. We have announcements today around Brexit that are fundamentally affecting this place more than anywhere else. And we have failed to form a government. So that means that a government has to be formed, in my view. What I'm trying to do is get to a point where we can actually have devolved government in Northern Ireland as quickly as possible. And if those two parties, and this isn't about just kicking them, they're both in boxes that I don't think they can get out of. They've put themselves there, but that's where they are. What we need now is someone to help us. This is a difficult process. It's one that is complicated. It's one that fails now and again. And now we have to have both of our communities, I suppose, represented by our two governments. That's what this process is set. That's how this process is set up. They need to act, but act in a way that is done sort of urgently. Take the hard issues off the table, and then put it up to all of us to form a government. I mean, that
well, it sounds
can be
like
done
devolution's over from what you're saying.
No, what I'm saying is I'm trying to facilitate devolution by allowing for the hard issues that haven't been dealt with by the local parties to be dealt with.
But what?
And
what,
I just 1 second, Steve. And what I would also do.
But Colm, sorry to interrupt. But what is the point of having devolution if the hard issues are dealt with outside of that devolved process?
Yeah.
Like so what's the point of having it?
Well, this isn't my preferred option. But
it is
we don't
now.
Well, the point is we don't have it right now. You know, we haven't had devolved government for almost 14 months. And my assessment, as gloomy as that is that we're not going to have it anytime soon if we keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. We are in, you know, a strange place. It's a strange political process. It's a strange setup. It's a necessary, cumbersome agreement. But it's one that has to be at times fixed by our two governments. It has happened a number of times in the past. But if we're going to do this, and I think we should, I think the government should also deal with the issue of petition of concern, for example, because that has been a block to progress. And it wasn't dealt with in that last accommodation, as they're calling it, between Sinn Féin and the DUP. And it would have led to more and more problems. That's what I've been saying. But, you know, whatever the two governments decide, I think I'll be uncomfortable with some of it. Other parties will be uncomfortable with some of it. But we have to get back to devolved government here. And my view right now, unfortunately, this is the only way it can be done.
Well, let's look at the practicalities of that and how that would roll out. So the British and Irish governments, Colm, come up with an agreement on an Irish Language Act. Let's begin with that. How does that work? Would that be very similar to what was in this draft text?
I would imagine so. I mean, they clearly were negotiating for a number of months around that particular issue. I still haven't seen the legislation, by the way, which, you know, we will all have to judge when it eventually ends up on Eamon Malley's website or somewhere else. But yes, I think that's what's going to have to happen, that the two governments, based on that issue, based around the accommodation that was come to by those two parties, I think that needs to be implemented as quickly as possible.
And how do you expect that in the real world to happen when the DUP clearly have leverage over the Tory government? Mm-hmm. That would mean that the DUP, in reality, if they allowed it to happen, if they didn't use their leverage, would be allowing for an Irish language commissioner, would be allowing for this commissioner to have legal powers to promote and facilitate the Irish language. An Irish Language Act, would it be called that? Something that the DUP to this very day are saying it will never happen. They will never allow it to happen. So how does it get the DUP out of that corner? Even if you say they are in it, they would probably dispute that. They've got the leverage to stop it.
Well, I'm not sure that they do. I think what you could have would be a very broad-based coalition in Westminster that would support a package of legislation right across the political parties. The difficulty here is, and we're seeing it today again, the DUP cannot be a block to every type of progress. So what the DUP and the British government signed up to in December, for example, around Brexit, basically said, and I said this at the time, and I said it the day after the Brexit referendum, that this is what was going to happen. They said either you have a soft Brexit or there's basically special status for Northern Ireland. So that's what I think is going to be in this text today. So the DUP at times are going to have to be faced down by the British government. The British government have a bigger responsibility to our process. So their responsibility is to be a co-guarantor for the Good Friday Agreement, not just a coalition partner to the DUP. And the
Theresa May's very survival is
on
dependent on the DUP. You know that.
Well, I think it should be tested. I think it should be tested. The choice is either that or we don't have any devolved government here. I think this British government are absolutely, you know, petrified of having to run Northern Ireland again. They don't have the headspace or the legislative space or any space at all because of the all-consuming nature of Brexit. They just do not want to do this. So my view is if they want, like they say they do, to see devolved government, well, let's make it easy for it to happen.
Have you given up on the very principle of power sharing?
No, what I'm saying very clearly is that this will allow power sharing to come back.
Where the big decisions are made outside of the local process.
No, this would be, they would make the decision around language, which has dogged this place for 20 years. They would make a decision to fix the petition of concern, which would then allow the big, hard decisions that haven't been taken for the past 10 or 15 years to be taken by the Assembly. So it would allow a smoother operation. Now, I know people are talking about going and getting an American and all these things. We will come back, no matter who's here, to the core problem that the DUP and Sinn Féin have proven themselves over the last year and particularly over the last couple of weeks that they cannot do this deal. So I think this has to be taken out of their hands. This is a representation of power sharing where the two governments representing both communities step in, as has happened many times in the past, and implement this to allow for devolved government to flourish again and to happen again and to allow us to get back to a situation where we can deal with the problems and there are many that the public out there are facing.
And who, Colm, in Northern Ireland voted for Fine Gael or the Conservative Party to run their lives here and represent them?
Well, they voted for the DUP, Sinn Féin, the SDLP, the All Students, the Alliance Party. And what are we doing? You know, I'm sitting in your studio in Radio Foyle. I should be in Stormont making laws and holding governments
to account.
But
now you're wanting to hand over. You fought for years. No. The SDLP fought for years for power sharing. You fought for that for many, many years.
And this is me
fighting
for it.
And now you're giving up.
No, this is me fighting for it again. This is me fighting for the Good Friday Agreement, which is under severe attack. We are hearing it from everywhere. There are a number of very
Who's it under attack from?
Well, it's under attack from Brexiteers. It's under attack from some commentators. It's under attack from the DUP. It's under attack from many people who think the Good Friday Agreement is now just awkward in terms of their in terms of their negotiations with the European Commission. What needs to happen is that we protect the Good Friday Agreement, we defend it. This is the best way to do it. The two governments are co-guarantors of the Good Friday Agreement. It is written that way. It was designed that way. I know because it was the SDLP. It's in the SDLP's core philosophy as to how this process should work. When the process fails, the governments step in. The process has totally and abjectly failed. Now is the time for the governments to step in, if only to get us back to a situation where we can have power sharing. Because nobody is telling me who understands this process, who's close to this process, who was anywhere near the negotiations, that this is going to get done anytime soon.
And what
this
are you
is the
do,
only
Colm,
way to bring it back, in my
what
view.
What are you going to do when there's another hard issue, which the two big parties fundamentally disagree? Are you going to go back to the default position of taking that decision out of Northern Ireland?
No, this is the point. This is
surely
the way
this
I say,
says power sharing doesn't work if you have to do what you're suggesting.
No, it's important to hear this because one of the mistakes that I saw in that draft accommodation, whatever it was that they didn't deal with the issue of petition of concern. I've been banging on about that now for the past year and for a lot longer before that. If we deal with the petition of concern, that will allow all of the hard issues, many of the hard issues at least, to be dealt with by the Assembly. So the petition of concern would remain as a protector of rights instead of being used to facilitate the blocking of rights. You know, marriage equality, by the way, wasn't going to be dealt with in that last agreement. If we fix the petition of concern, put it back to where it should have been, the way it was written into the Good Friday Agreement, then I think we can have marriage equality dealt with here by local people. Otherwise, these decisions are going to start being taken by politicians in London, and that is not what we want to see happen. What we have to do is the minimal amount of decisions taken in London, and then to facilitate local politicians and local people. Because right now, the world is talking about Northern Ireland. The world is talking about the border. And we're not talking about it because we don't have the space to talk about it. Nobody is listening to us because we don't have ministers and a government in place. I mean, that is pretty fundamental stuff. We are faced with the biggest shake to our constitutional arrangements, the biggest shake to our economy, the biggest shake to people in border counties like the one that I live in, who move across the border very, very frequently. All of those people's lives could be potentially completely uprooted, and we're not talking about it. We're still talking about issues that we should have resolved many, many years ago. So I come to this place with a determination to defend the Good Friday Agreement and a tactic to get us back to it.
And what decisions then would be left for the local devolved parties to make if they were big decisions? What would be the rules around this engagement? Where would there be a time period under your design within which a decision had to be made, or it does go back to the British and Irish government again?
No, what I'm saying is that there have been a couple of issues that have dogged this process for many, many years.
But there will always be another issue.
Well, that's why you fix the petition of concern, you see. So this is why I'm concerned about this idea that we just deal with marriage equality, for example, in London, because there will be another issue like that will come up. What we have to do is remove the barrier to issues like marriage equality being dealt with in Northern Ireland. That barrier is the way in which the petition of concern has been written into the standing orders, not how it was written into the Good Friday Agreement, by the way. So what we do is we get back to the Good Friday Agreement to allow for those types of issues to be dealt with. And I think we can move on. Of course, legacy is another issue that has to be dealt with by the British and Irish governments. You know, that just has to be. That's where much of that sits. We need to get to a point where we're legislating for those institutions to allow all of the people out there who've been left behind by this process to finally have access to truth and justice.
What about the big issue? What about health, for example? Are you a leader of the SLP that's saying that the British government should make that decision and consult with the Irish government, but at the end of the day it would be the Conservatives deciding?
No, I'm not. What I'm saying is we deal with the issues of contention in terms of that is stopping a government being formed, right? Rightly or wrongly, that's what's happening. So that's largely the language and a couple of other issues. So I think the issues like marriage equality, as I've said, can be dealt with by tweaking how the Assembly works. Issues like language need to be dealt with by the governments. And then we get on with agreeing a programme for government. Of course, in the discussions that we had with other parties, we tried to get conversations about programme for government. What we wanted to see in terms of health was an agreed implementation plan for that. We also wanted to see more childcare places for working parents. We also wanted to see expansion of McGee and city deals and proper east-west balanced economy, economic intervention. So all those things can be done by normal, everyday politics, but we need to get back to it. Right now, we can't even discuss those issues.
And would you, Colm, have the British and Irish governments making the big decision over the legacy issue? Would they make that above the heads of locally elected politicians?
Well, I think they have to. It is their responsibility to do those things anyway. I mean, they need to do it in consultation with victims. If it was up to me, and I said this many, many times to both governments, that victims should have been far closer to the discussions around legacy. Victims should have been far closer to all of those conversations. And we still don't know what the final consultation will look like. But victims need to have their say now. And victims need to be properly spoken to about what those legacy institutions would do. I have deep concerns about how effective it will be, but I've yet to see the final draft. But they need to get on and do it, because we have let these people down for 20 years. These are the people who have suffered the most because of our past. And we haven't sorted that problem out yet. They should at least have access to truth and justice. That is a fundamental tenet of any democratic society, that people should not be denied all of that by our governments or by paramilitary organisations. So they need to get that access. That has to be done regardless. I mean, the legacy issue was there long before our government collapsed. It had to be dealt with anyway. It ended up bumping up against and getting trapped in the negotiations around Irish Language Act, for example, and still hasn't come out and seen the light of day. These
but the
are discussions
lack of a negotiation,
have
to
be
clear, the lack of a successful outcome over the Irish Language Act, for example, is a sign that the two parties fundamentally disagree. Now, dig into that, Colm, what's it mean? It means that the DUP, representing a large proportion of the unionist community in Northern Ireland, do not agree with the Irish language demands that Sinn Féin are making. So whether the British government got that across the line or not, the biggest party in Northern Ireland, representing the most unionists in Northern Ireland, don't agree with it. So what would that do to the culture here, to the feel of the fabric of Northern Ireland, if the majority of unionists think that something's been done over their head and the biggest party in Northern Ireland, Unionist Party, couldn't stop it?
Well, I can't imagine how that would feel. We're about to face into we are facing into a big news story today about Brexit. And what happened around Brexit? The vast, vast, vast majority of nationalists and the majority of everybody here voted against Brexit. That is being done above our heads. It's being done to us. It's being done in a way that is deeply damaging to our economy and our process. Now, an Irish Language Act is not the same as that. What we have to do is recognise that in any negotiation, in any process like this, what we need to do is get back to the principle of partnership and compromise. That has failed. Those two parties have failed this process and failed the people over the last year. Somebody needs to step up and step in. That is the responsibility of the governments, as awkward and as cumbersome as that is. And as sad I am to say that, that's what has to happen now.
Is this what you're going to the Taoiseach to tell him today?
Yes, because otherwise what's going to happen? We're going to have a government here run by the British Conservative Party in partnership with the DUP. Now, what does that mean for everybody who doesn't support the DUP? That looks very, very much like unionist majority rule by the back door. I don't want to see that. We can't have that happen. What we need to do is get back to the point where, just as we have drifted apart and ran apart over the last 13 or 14 months, we have to start, as two communities, moving back together again. And as I've said a number of times over the past couple of weeks, my Irishness does not threaten anybody's Britishness, and other people's Britishness does not threaten my Irishness. We have to find a way to accommodate each other, to work together. My view is, as difficult as it is, that's the Good Friday Agreement. Well, it's now time to get back to it. It's now time for the two governments to help us get back to it. And this can be done quickly. Or we are faced into a long, protracted period of direct rule with the DUP having decisions been taken and negotiated in private rooms in Westminster under no scrutiny at all.
You mentioned the European Union there. Before we let you go this morning, where should the border be post-Brexit?
I don't want to see any borders. What I've said
since... Well, it's going to have to be one, isn't there?
Well, no. What I've said since the morning after that terrible result, I said, look, either the UK as a whole stays in the customs union and single market and they do a soft Brexit, or Northern Ireland needs to be protected because of all of the political and peace reasons that we know about. That means special status for Northern Ireland. Now, other people have taken that term up and, you know, done lots of glossy documents, but we were talking about this from the very, very beginning. Now, so our idea is this, and the agreement that was made in December, the political agreement between the UK and the European Commission that was made in December, basically said that. And now what's happening today is that, in very stark legal terms, because that's how these documents are written, it is saying that either the UK comes up with a solution that stops a hard border in Ireland, and my view is that is basically a soft Brexit, so the customs union, a customs union, this single market, something that looks very much like the single market in terms of regulatory alignment, or Northern Ireland has to be kept within those customs arrangements and
Northern,
and market arrangements.
If Northern Ireland remains within the single market and customs union, there will be a border in the Irish Sea.
Yes, and I have said that. And I
so
have
how, does,
said that.
How does that work?
Well, it doesn't work if people who are, you know, support DUP or Brexiteers don't want it to work, then they should argue for maintenance of customs arrangements and a single market access for the UK as a whole. You know, you can't have... There's a new phrase out there called cakeism. You know, and there's a lot of it going about where people want their cake and eat it. And you just
can't have a vote where the majority of people throughout the UK voted to leave. That's the result. What's the point of a leave vote if you're remaining in the customs union and the single market?
Well, I don't think there's any point of a leave vote. I think it's very damaging. But during all the debates that I had and others had during the referendum, we were told that there is no threat to the customs union or single market. We were told that there is no threat of a hard border. We all knew that was nonsense. But we have also been told by Brexiteers during all of those years where they campaigned to leave that they didn't have a problem with the economic arrangements. It was just when the European Union became this political... what they would see as a move towards a political superstate. I disagreed with that, but that's what they said. So What they're doing now is, once they've got the Brexit vote, they're saying, actually, what we want to throw out is all those market arrangements, all those trading arrangements, all of that good economic stuff. We want to throw that out as well, just because we have this ideological vision about leaving everything to do
with
the European Union.
But you want to stay in the European Union. You want to stay in the single market and the customs union. And this country, the United Kingdom, would have no say in that whatsoever.
Well,
so you're staying in institutions you have no longer any say over.
Well, this was one of the key arguments that I and others made during the referendum, that they should be staying in the European Union to allow... yes, they should be staying in the European Union to allow full access. So, but the point is this, Stephen. What are people saying? They're telling me that we can have no hard border, which has been proven by every expert around, that that is nonsense if we leave the customs arrangements in the single market. I don't know how that works. Could someone tell me how we do no hard border when we're in a different trading relationship with people in Buncrana as people are in Derry? I mean, how does that actually work? It does not work. The British government have had many months now to come up with arrangements. They've been offered again another opportunity to come up with arrangements. I don't think they'll be able to come up with arrangements that stop a hard border. I think, for everybody's sake, they should stay in the customs union and single market. And I've been saying this to the Labour Party, I've been saying this to everybody that I can talk to in the Conservative Party, that is the only solution they have.
Just finally, part of being a leader in Northern Ireland is understanding the sensitivities of Northern Ireland. If there's a border in the Irish Sea, you know how the DUP will react to that.
I'm not calling for a border in the Irish Sea, Stephen.
Would you accept it, though, wouldn't you?
Well, it will become a reality is if people, the Brexiteers in the DUP, and many of them are in Westminster, and the Brexiteers in the Tory party, and some even in the Labour party, get their way, then it will become a political and economic reality that there will be a border in the Irish Sea.
Well,
but that's not what I'm calling
Sir
for.
Sir Geoffrey Donaldson
the DUP. Let me just explain this, Stephen, for a second. Because if people... Let's take Sammy Wilson, for example. Sammy Wilson is constantly saying that we have to leave the customs union, the single market, and we have to go and get trade deals around the world. I don't know how that's going, but that's what he keeps saying. And what that will precipitate, if you listen to the other side of the negotiating table, is a border down the Irish Sea. I'm not arguing for that. What I'm arguing for is for the British government to wake up and wise up and understand that their best place is within the customs union, the single market, and that also will protect, mean there'll be no border in the Irish Sea and no border on the island of Ireland. Surely that's the best result for everybody. And by the way, I didn't get us here. People like Sammy and people on the Leave side got us into this mess. They don't know how to get us out of it. I'm just laying out the facts. The facts are fairly, fairly simple. If you leave the customs union and single market, there will be a border somewhere. That's why I'm arguing against it.
Well, and Sir Geoffrey Donaldson from the DUP has made it very clear. Here's what he has said. If the EU or Dublin believes the UK government will be signing up to a border in the Irish Sea, they are deluded.
Well, why did he support the agreement in December? Because it was pretty clear what that meant.